Welcome everybody to this week's podcast, to our lovely podcast all about family history. And my name's Helen Tovey, I'm editor of Family Tree, and with me is
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
And a little while ago we called you the AKA the running genealogist, but I think you're getting a bit fed up with that running thing, aren't you?
Oh yeah, who wants to do that anymore? I'm over it. I've done my running. No, I love it still, but it's a lot of investment when you do marathons and stuff. So now I'm just running for fun. Or maybe I'll go back, plan my routes based on my family history, because I am getting quite a lot of local names and addresses now, so...
I think that would be good.
Definitely.
You say running is very good for thinking time, isn't it? So do you find yourself thinking about family history when you're doing your running?
Sometimes, especially like when I'm running in the local area, but most of the time, I go the other way around. I just think it clears my head, so there's nothing left in there. I mean, there's not much to start with, but by the time I've had a run, I'm just zen as anything.
Lovely. That sounds good. So what have you been getting up to this week with your family history?
I went a bit crazy. I went a bit GRO website mad and started ordering so many certificates that I had to stop myself. It almost felt like cheating, I'll be honest. You know the information you're after. I don't know why I think it's cheating. Anyway, you know the information you're after. Like, I need a death date. I need to find the reason for death, blah, blah, blah. And so you just type in the little numbers and letters for what page and what volume it is that you've got off Ancestry. And then they just give you them. It just seems really easy.
It seems easy to you because you now know what you're doing with it. Whereas if you scroll back a few months and I said, Nathan, you need to get a death certificate for somebody who died in 1909, you'd be like, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to look. Where's the cheapest place? Where's the best place? What are my options? How do I know I've got the right information? You'd be stumped, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's very true, actually. It all felt very natural. But the flip side of that is, after having done that, I literally went a little bit crazy. I was finishing off the George Horatio Nelson stuff. So I looked up his second wife. And then I also looked up, I don't know why I knew this. I think maybe my mum had told me, but the second wife had a child that didn't live very long. So I was finding the death certificate for that child. So I found all that information. I'll go back to that later. But in doing that, I then was like, looking at other things, I'm like, right, I could get a marriage certificate here, or I could get this, I could get that, I could get that. And before I know it, like the money that I'm spending is like piling up, and I'm like, I don't want to be spending this money all the time on every single person. I need to get back to Ancestry, see what I can get for free before I go back. Because it felt easy. It's like, I can get this information so readily. Whereas I know from some of the hints within Ancestry, you can actually get a lot of the information I was after. But sometimes you obviously just can't, which for the people that I've bought, I couldn't, which is why I went there. But whilst I was there, I was just like, oh, well, I might as well type so-and-so's name in and get their death certificate and so-and-so. So I could have filled in lots of gaps, but it was going to cost me.
Yes. So I'm going to put you on the spot now and ask you. So obviously, you know, when you go to the GRO website, you're going to be ordering births, marriages and deaths. So what do you think? I'm not saying you're wrong, but what do you think you can get for free on Ancestry, or not for free, but as part of your Ancestry subscription? This, like, how is Ancestry going to solve for your...
Ancestry will get me marriages, definitely. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen dates of marriages. I've also had death dates for some people, depending on what documents I can find. Birth dates, can I get birth dates? I think I can. This is what I was actually going on to, actually. A point being, yes, I was very comfortable on the GRO site finding all this information. But then when I was like, stop spending money, Nathan, go back and do some proper research before you cheat. It's not cheating.
Not cheating.
But go back and see what you can get for free. When I went back to Ancestry, I felt like I'd forgotten all of my basic training that you've given me. I was just like, how do I know this is Thomas, whatever? How do I know this is my so-and-so? And I was a little bit terrified. I can't remember now who I was searching, but I know it was Alexander McKay. And there were at least two or three people that came up, and I was like, well, that could be my Alexander. But how do I know? And I don't know, again, whether it is just because I've forgotten the information because I haven't been there enough recently, or because I've reached the end of what information was naturally available from my mum. Mm-hmm. So I'm like in unexplored ground.
Mm.
And I've got hints of information that I know is right, but there's a little bit more uncertainty for me. So I'm like, obviously, I like to be meticulous, so it's kind of fact-checking, but then I'm like freaking out about where I check these facts. Mm. So I had this Alexander McKay, who's married to somebody called Jeannie. Mm. I found loads of Alexander McKay's married to someone called Jane.
Yeah.
And that's such a close name. It's like, it could be the same person, but then... I think I saw one of the censuses and there was a Jeannie on there. Mm. Again, like you say, if someone's filled it out, it might be a pet name that they've just put in as opposed to the proper name. And it terrified me. I was like, oh my God, I've forgotten everything.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah, there's so many ancestors we have to deal with that unless we recently worked on that particular branch, then even if you've been doing your family history for a while, you have to kind of get your eye in again with that branch. So, do you want to tell me any more or shall I butt in and get bossy?
It depends on what you want to know. I can tell you about the end of my George McKay search. No.
Yeah, do that.
Not George, sorry. George Horatio Nelson. Mm. It was quite interesting, actually. So last time we established that his first wife, Margaret, had died post-birth, mm-hmm. her child. The child, I did a search for, with your assistance, actually, and we couldn't find a birth or a death certificate. So the idea is that that child was stillborn, so then wasn't registered. So we finished that bit off, went on to the next, which is Teresa. I had it in my head, she died in childbirth. Mm. But when I've researched it, her death, well, I got the GIRO certificate. She died at the age of 71. So I just hadn't been taking any notice of the dates and how old these people were. I presumed it was like a like-for-like swap from one wife to the next. The age range is completely different. But she did have a child called Hector, who only lived for 21 days. So he has a birth certificate and a death certificate. So I found that. It's just interesting because like I hadn't bothered to look at the placing in time of the two wives. So I think I said before, Edward Tankman, when he died, or before he died, he put his war pension, the next person in line to get it was Teresa, who wasn't his mother. And I thought that was really weird. I was like, oh, he must have had a really good relationship with her to put her name before his dad's name. But in the context of things now, looking at it chronologically, she brought him up, which I hadn't even considered. I hadn't even comprehended. I was just like, yeah, that's the mum. That child was brought up by that mum. Hadn't really placed the dates as to when she died and how old that child was. Then the following on relationships. It was a bit of an eye-opener for that for me. Like, I wasn't paying attention to the correlation of dates between ages of children and mothers and things. So that was quite cool.
Yeah, insights like that are always, you always feel like a whole little door's opened and you've got a bit more understanding, don't you, about the people you're learning about.
Definitely. And it all makes sense as well. It's like, oh, that does make sense. But I, like I said, I got it in my head that both of his wives had died quite young. No, and I had no real reason to believe that. I guess I just got caught up in looking for these children that had died young. Very strange.
You're not alone in that. We're doing this brilliant course at the moment and it's by Dr. Sophie Kay and it's all about research skills. And one of the key questions she says that we all need to keep asking ourselves are, what assumptions am I making? Because we just all do it. So that's you because one mother died young, you kind of just assume the other one did. And, you know, you just kind of, before you know it, you've made assumptions that you didn't even realise you're making it. But she invites us all to keep reflecting on that so that we actually don't jump to wrong conclusions and just keep assessing everything in the light of evidence, not assumptions.
Yeah, it's easy to do because, like, obviously we've discussed it where you say, like, because of contraception, etc., there were children popping out every 2 years. So that was in my mind quite heavily. And the facts were backing that up with all the children. So I think I got locked into that. And then the idea of the fact that it's quite dangerous and childbirth, and totally wrong. She was 71. So
A good age.
A good age for her, yeah.
Yeah, for her. Yeah.
A little son, but yeah.
Yeah, I like the way as well you're saying, putting the information in a timeline. So that's effectively what you did, even if it's just mentally. Not, you can physically draw up a timeline, but the way you then reflected on the details that you knew and were like, okay, so Tankman's mum had died. It was Teresa who brought him up. And you see, it kind of sheds light on everything, doesn't it? Putting things in date order.
It really does. It changes the dynamic of things, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on then, get bossy.
So when I asked you, maybe it was a bit mean, but when I said, you know, you thought you could get some information free, or that is within an ancestry subscription rather than having to buy birth, marriage and death certificates from the GRO, then you were right about lots of the things. So you would be able to get some, the marriage information and dates would be pretty good for the period you're looking in. And you would be able to get death dates potentially from things like the National Probate Calendar, and you would be able to get birth dates potentially from, I think, the 1939 register. So there are places where you can get some of the information, but then obviously you're not going to be getting, if you get a burial register entry, you're very unlikely to get a cause of death. So you're going to get some information, but not all of it. And if you think back to George Horatio Nelson's first wife, who died of, you know, shortly after giving birth, and then you found out quite specific information about how she died, that she'd had those puerperal convulsions, hadn't she? So that's a very tragic, unpleasant way to die. But you're not going to get those, you kind of finer clues.
Yeah,
you're not wasting your money, is what I'm trying to say. But and so the partly you're not wasting your money, and partly for different eras and different areas, different information is available. So when the birth, marriage, and death records, when the baptism, marriage and burial registers for the church started off, they were really, really basic and didn't have much information. But that by the time you're using them in the late 1800s, early 1900s, they're a lot more detailed. So they do have, so it's the whole time, there's not one easy answer, is what I'm trying to say. You have to keep thinking, what era am I in? Which part of the world am I in? What information have I got? And then by your growing knowledge, by all your familiarity with, for instance, a death certificate from the GRO, you go, okay, I've got this information from other sources within Ancestry, but I still need to get the death certificate, if you feel that you do, because I'm going to get this X, Y, and Z information. So it's kind of partly a matter of experience trying to learn what clues you can find where.
Yeah, so you're tricking me, basically. I should have said, it depends on what I'm doing.
Maybe, yes. Such an annoying answer though, isn't it? But it's worth knowing. It's worth knowing there are possibilities, and it's worth keeping your eye out of what's possible where and when, isn't it?
That's definitely. Well, I mean, my reason for going for the death certificate for Margaret Nelson was to see if I could find any details of a hint of there being another child, which didn't appear on the censuses and didn't appear anywhere else on the records. So it was, there's an extra clue to be found from actually seeing that death certificate, which we wouldn't have got otherwise. But it's quite cool to get to that point to think, right, I'm at that point. I've clearly got enough information on Margaret to know her marriage, her birth and her death.
Yeah. I think you're doing amazing. I think the insights you're getting and how reflective you're being, I think you're doing awesomely. I'm going to continue to be mean, though. So when you said there were three Alexander Riquets and you weren't sure which one was yours, and you're like, and I can just follow the hints. And I was just like, oh, you said follow the hints. So, Nathan, I want to put you on the spot. You're not, please don't tell me you're just going to press the hints and go for it. You're not going to do that, are you? You're allowed to have a look, but tell me what you're actually going to do.
Oh, I love the hints. My current method, be it right or wrong, is to go into the hints.
Yeah.
And I ignore any that come up from other people's trees.
Yeah.
But I look at documents that could be related, that have dates or names or locations that are familiar to me for that person.
Yes.
So I'm a bad, bad person. That's...
No, that's not bad. That's good. I think that's really good. And so you're applying a nice analytical brain to documentary evidence to find out whether or not it's your person. And you're clear in your mind that some of those records will potentially relate to the person you're after and some won't. And so you're clear that there's a risk there. So my only, maybe I'm just having a bad day, but my only nitpick with that is that you are, is a kind of little bit of an element of trust, that you're trusting that the algorithm has found, done an exhaustive search and found all of the instances. So you're searching on Alexander McKay and it's returning all the Alexander McKays and you've got three to choose from. But I just feel like, well, potentially, what if there's a trans? I'm such a kind of what if what? What if there's a transcription error and your Alexander McKay, his name has been slightly kind of mangled and so isn't coming up through the algorithm, but he is there in the database. So you could be, there could be a fourth one with a slight spelling mistake on their name and that's your person, but you're not going to know that if you've just relied on the hints. Whereas if you actively go out to search for him, using, for instance, going through individual collections in the card catalogue, or that's what I'd recommend. I wouldn't recommend going straight onto the big ancestry search because you'd have potentially so many search results. But you're not going to know what your other possibilities are, and you're not going to quite know how those three Alexander McKays got served up to you.
Mm. I mean, in my defence, I don't know. Well, for me, it felt like, because I was coming back to this method of searching, but with every single entry, I was very, very cautious about the information giving me. Like, even if I felt it was vaguely right, I didn't even dare click, yes, this is my Alexander, because I wasn't sure. And like I said, I don't know why I know this, but he was married to someone called Jeannie. And there were lots of Janes out there that he married, or someone called Alexander married. And I can see the potential for that Jeannie to actually have been Jane, even though it was. So that is a little bit terrifying in that respect. And then I also had some Alexanders come up where it was misspelled. So it was Alexander, A-L-E-C, instead of X. And one of them actually, I think I might have approved this hint, it was him, but there was obviously a typo on that entry. So I am aware of those things, but I haven't taken it to the next level where I'm looking through the cards. But I did honestly just freak myself out a bit because it...
And I feel mean saying what I've just said, because you're doing so awesomely, and I am one of those people who I worry too much, and I stall myself and get in the, like, oh, I haven't got enough, you know. So that's just a stupid thing to do as well. So, and I don't want to put anybody off family history by making it sound too difficult. It's just, I've been too boring.
No, I agree, because I want the completionist factor. I want it to be correct. And I know it's going to happen. I know I'm going to put wrong things on my tree at some point, but I want to do as much as I can to avoid that. And I'm equally cautious. I don't want to say, yes, this particular document pertains to my person without feeling the facts. And I've, as much as I've just said, I go on and I ignore other people's trees. I was looking at a couple of records and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is my Alexander. It matches up, but I was still a bit scared. And I went onto someone else's search just to see what names they had linked to theirs. And everything looked very similar. Like the children's names were all matching. Wife was down as Jane. And I'm still convinced it's not Jane. I can't remember why I feel like this. I've just got an inkling it's not Jane. It is Jean or Jeannie. But this person's tree then, I was like, well, I'm not 100% sure that their record's correct, so I'm not going to just blindly believe it, even though I see the children and I feel like the children match up right. It felt great, and I can't remember, again, what I did to look into this person's tree. And again, I don't want to say mean things about other people's trees, but it looked like they'd just gone and agreed lots and lots of different documents.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That was it. There were discrepancies on the death date. So the death date of either Alexander or Jean/Jane, there were about 7 options on the timeline. So they'd clearly agreed loads of documents that didn't agree quite rightly on the same date. So they'd just been, yep. So that made me step back and be like, I need to be a bit cautious here. This person has agreed a lot of documents that don't match because there were so many options for when this person died.
Yes.
And I won't let myself do that on my... I won't let myself have a speculative one appearing at all. It doesn't suit me and my mindset.
Yeah.
So yeah, a lot going on.
It is a lot going on. I love it. And you still haven't finished with your marathon running and you still managed to get all of that done.
Cool. Yeah, well, it was a nice break. It was a nice way to spend some time and some money. But
yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's so tempting though, isn't it? You're like, oh, I'll just get this for me, or I might as well get a marriage certificate. That's a question I've got for you, actually. I don't know whether this is, again, maybe I'm answering my own question. Maybe it's to do with the time scale of things. But early on in my searches, I was getting, I don't know what the name of the document is. Is it the band's one? I'm not sure. Where it tells you the marriage. So it's got the two people getting married. So you've got the fella, the woman with her maiden name, and then the two fathers. So early on, I was getting a lot of those documents. So it was like, great, I know her maiden name. I know it's him, so it's correct. And then I get the two fathers, so I'm getting a generation back for both of them. But now, when I do my searches, there's very few marriage references. Is that to do with the date range getting further back, or is it just because I'm not searching correctly?
It's probably to do with lots of things. So depending on how far back you're going, then it could be to do with the date range. But I don't think you're going to be back. You're still in the 1800s, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. So I suspect more likely it's that period the marriage registers for the place that you're searching haven't been digitized or haven't been added to Ancestry yet. So that's why they're not turning up. So that's, you know, I waffled on about the card catalogue, which sounds really difficult. But what it is, imagine you've literally got loads and loads of those index cards. Imagine you've got a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And on there, it says Yorkshire marriages. And then in there, there's a little card for each person's or each couple's marriage. So if you go to the card catalogue, you can go and search that you want to look for any of their collections. So imagine that's like a drawer for Yorkshire marriages. And it'll bring you up all the drawers, which to do with Yorkshire marriages. And then you can search within there and they'll give you a breakdown. Ancestry are really good at that. They'll say what year, maybe what spans of year are covered, whether any records are missing. They'll spell it all out. You have to scroll down below the search fields and then it will have paragraphs of information. We got this information from here. This is where the originals are held. This is what's included. This is what got eaten by mice. They didn't literally say eaten by mice, but you know, that sort of idea. Yeah.
Okay. So is that why some of my hints, it's suggesting a document, but I can't look at that document. It's just not been scanned in yet. Is that?
Yes.
Ancestry knows it exists, but they've yet to get around to scanning it.
Could be partly that. So it could be that they've acquired an index from somewhere else. So there's a typed up. So imagine you've got your drawer with all the lovely cards in. Imagine they've been typed up. So you're seeing the drawer with all the typed up cards, but you're not actually seeing that digitized copy of the old marriage register entry. You're not seeing the digitized entry in the old book.
Right.
So that index is just going to be a list which is going to go so-and-so married so-and-so, potentially, you know, with some sort of date and some sort of place, but you're going to know already, you're aware, aren't you? Because of your improved knowledge and skills at genealogy, you're like, wait a minute, this is only a little bit of information and I can't see a picture of the beautiful old original document. So you know already you're missing out on stuff. So it could be they just digitize an index. Yes.
Right. Because that terrifies me as well. Because like you said, I feel like I want to see the document so I can see if there are any clues that make me say this is 100% matched up to what I believe and what I see. Where it's got a little graphic of like a page, but it's not actually a real page. And then it just gives you the transcript, I guess.
That is, it is annoying when that happens, but that's still worth including. So it's worth including in your notes somewhere. So it could, if you don't want to include it on your tree, you can just include it on your research log. And say what you found so far, and then you can have a to-do next time you're still on the hunt to try and find the original record.
Yeah.
It could be that it's digitized on a different website. So if I'm a pastor, really good for parish registers, or it could be that you can try the local family history society if they've done more detailed transcriptions. So obviously when you transcribe, when an index is made, it could be really simple, couldn't it? It could just be like, the index could just say, Blogs married Jones, or it could go Helen Bloggs married Tom Jones, or it could, there's ever, it depends how, to what level something's indexed, that as to how useful and detailed the index is. And yeah. It's worth hunting around and seeing what else there is for that place.
Okay, cool.
And there's a really good place. There's a one-stop shop, which is your first port of call. So you go on the FamilySearch site and they have a wiki. And I don't think you need to be logged in to use it, but even if you have to be logged in, it's free. So just go to the FamilySearch wiki and search on your place of interest. And they've got, I can't even remember, I think it's roughly 100,000 different genealogy wiki pages on there. And wow. Some of them are, so if Pudsey's covered, it could even be that level of detail. It could be one for Pudsey, or you might just have to look for Yorkshire, but it will say for the key records, like the baptism, marriages and burials and birth, marriage and destinies, it will say what's digitised and which websites it's digitised on.
Oh, that's good.
It's really good, isn't it? Just random Googling, yeah.
That's cool. Just going back a bit, you've given me a massive flashback into my childhood. The indexing cards in those drawers, I really like, I've got a vivid memory of like going to like, I don't know, a library somewhere with my mum and dad, and they're like flicking through those little thin skinny drawers, pulling them out, finding all these references. I don't think I knew what they were at the time, they're just like looking through, but that's really, really cool to think about that.
It's a little time travel, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd totally forgotten about that until you'd mentioned it. That's cool.
Yeah. It's a weird name, isn't it, calling it a card catalogue?
But it was that though, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
They all had like a little hole in them because they were connected. There's a little metal rod that goes through the drawer. I remember it now. And you just threw and be like, oh yeah, it's whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a question or not, but I've got out of Pudsey and the McKays are actually Scottish. It's a shocker. But they actually are. So I'm getting lots of documents for Alexander that are based in Scotland, and I don't know why I've got a little bit of fear about that. Should I have? Are they the same sort of documents, or are they different? Are there any discrepancies that I need to be aware of?
So, partly, you're really lucky because the Scottish records tend to be more detailed in lots of instances than the English records. So that's a good thing. The bad thing is that lots of them are pay-per-view, so you're going to have a bit of that GRO, oh no, I'm rubbing through my money, rather than when you pay for a subscription, you kind of forget that you've paid money, don't you? So what you can do is, so you're getting these hints and suggestions to records in Scotland that you're receiving when you're on Ancestry.
Yeah.
So that's really valuable. Although I'm such a little hint snob, I would definitely recommend, if you've got Scottish ancestors, keep on searching for them within Ancestry. And it has, so that's a prime example, it has transcripts of the Scottish census, for instance. So look them up in there. You're only going to get the typed version. You're not going to get the beautiful old digitized document. But then you can hunt around, you can make sure you've got definitely the right census reference for your Alexander McKay and his family or the other family members. Then you go on the Scotland's People website. You put in the precise place because you know then where he is, and you've got references and things like that. Then you can search precisely for your right Alexander McKay, spend your 6 credits, which is about £1.50, and you'll get a census document. Whereas the other option is you ignore Ancestry, you ignore the transcriptions on Ancestry, go straight to Scotland's People, rattle through a whole load of credits, do what I do, go, I just know, I've got a gut feeling about this one, I know it's right, spend your £1.50 and it's wrong. And you go, oh. And then you have to remember not to do that. That's silly. Yeah.
I just feel stuck.
So whereabouts in Scotland then?
I want to say Paisley. But that's me committing to say that is my Alexander. It's so confusing. And I guess everything is pointing to that maybe Jane and Jeannie are the same person. But I found a Jeannie in Paisley. I found a Jane in Paisley. I found them both in the same location, and there's Alexander references as well. Mm-hmm. I've got the 1871 census and the 1861 census. Mm-hmm. If it's the same person, the residence is the same location. Oh, not quite the same location, the same area. So these are Scottish people living in Bradford, and On the 1861, the spouse is called Jeannie. On the 1871, the spouse is called Jane.
Mm.
There's lots of confusion crossing over with this.
What are you going to do to sort this out?
I think I'm going to go to a different branch on my tree and do that instead.
That isn't even a bad idea. Like people do say, when you get stuck, sometimes you could persist with it. And then sometimes go to a different branch. Meantime, you'll definitely be learning more stuff. Like, or not just you, any of us would be getting better at doing our research. And then when you go back to the branch you're stuck on, quite often you'll be like, oh, why was I stuck here? I know what I'm going to do now. Listen to a really cool podcast or a really cool webinar, and now I know how to solve this problem. And so there's a few people who can help you with this, with the way they tackle problems. And one's Phil Isherwood, and he wrote an article back at the end of 24 in Family Tree, and he was talking about timelining. So you've got your Jean and your Jane. You want to try and establish, are they one or two people? And so you're just going to keep calm for the moment, and you're going to gather all the information that you can for Jean or Janie, right from their birth, right to their death. And you're going to, what you're trying to establish as, are they only turning up once. Whereas let's say, for instance, you're going to get Jeannie in the 1871, and there's the Jane turning up in the 1871, you go, hang on a minute, we're dealing with two people. Whereas as long as you can only find one person one at a time,
yeah,
then you're looking at one person. And I think Sophie Kay, to mention her again, she does have so many good ways of remembering things, though, and she calls it the Superman principle. So the idea is, you know, there's whatever he's called,
Clark Kent.
So you either have him or Superman, but you're never going to get both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's your thing to hold in your mind.
That's a great way to look at
it. It's a really helpful way to look at it, isn't it? Yeah. So as soon as you've got them turning up in the same place, you're like two people, as long as they're only turning up once each. And as long as one of them isn't doing things long after the other one died, then you are good. You've got one person. So that's your tactic or strategy. I never know the difference between a tactic and a strategy, but that's your thing to do.
Yeah, no, that's good bit of sleuthing there. I like it.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just very interesting personally to obviously have some of these results being in Scotland. It's put me out of my comfort zone because as much as I used to moan about just being in Pudsey, I knew the area, I knew the linkage. So if locations that were mentioned, like obviously they're like suburbs of Pudsey or smaller areas, then I was like, well, that's definitely correct, that's right, because I know where that is and I know that these people were there. Now I'm in like a completely different location and I feel like an alien. I don't really know the area, I don't know anything about it, I don't know what it all means. And I guess this is going to happen more and more as you sort of expect.
It is. It happens to me, I think it happens to everyone on their family history kind of lifetime, whatever you want to call it, their journey. Because as soon as you go to a new place, those place names don't mean anything to you. You don't know whether it's a town or a hamlet. You don't know how far apart it is. You don't know whether it's one and the same thing, a little suburb or somewhere else. And so you need a map, temporary map. So you're going to go on the National Library of Scotland website and get an Ordnance Survey map roughly from the mid-late 1800s.
Yep.
Yeah. And so you're going to have your map. And you're going to be doing the timeline for Jeannie Jane. What else can you do? I think those two things will really help you.
Yeah, it sounds like great ideas, to be honest.
And so although you'll be going to a different website, you're going to be going to Scotland's People, and you're going to be buying pay-per-view credits. So you can spend, I think it's like £7.50 or £10, and then you get a bunch of credits, which you're going to use judiciously because you'll be searching in tandem at Ancestry. When you find the census and the birth, marriage and deaths, or the baptism, marriage and burial register entries, then they're going to be records that feel really familiar to you.
Mm.
You're going to, oh, it's just the same. Can't tell the difference.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm.
I think basically because I was like in my little rabbit hole of the Georgia ratio, I wanted to come back to Ancestry, look at my direct descendants and get loads of easy wins and just go back quite quickly. Like, because obviously the initial stages are much easier and it hasn't worked. I mean, I've only looked at the Nikkeis, but it hasn't worked out that way. It's like, this isn't quick and easy. This is actually quite challenging.
So I'm interested as well. So what made them leave Scotland? Like, what line of work were they in? Because
do I have this information?
And back to the, while you're looking for the information, I've got quite a lot of Scottish ancestors, and they definitely are more prone to like those nicknames. I think they call them T names. I could be wrong. Anyway, the pet names. So the Jeannie Jane thing. I've got loads of Scottish ancestors, and they always seem to have a pet name which they use just as happily and readily as their kind of formal name.
Yeah.
So that seems very Scottish to me.
Yes. I can't read the handwriting for the profession.
Because that's just fun as well. Because sometimes, you know, you're really good at this, of trying to imagine what their lives were like and people's line of work, whether it was, you know, it was going through challenging times. That's a great reason to move, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. I can't make what out. Marsh, what does it say? I can't read that. Narrator, Marshall, wardrobe.
No, I don't know either.
Wardrobe man. Marshall man.
I can't read it either. Can you take a little screen grab of it and can you send it to me so I can just ponder on it?
Yep.
I'm not going to give you a quick answer.
I wonder if it was in the transcript.
Might have been. Fascinating, though. So the other things which could help you is, this is what people say when you're trying to transcribe things, is you're going to be looking around on that document, because it's all got the same person's handwriting, largely, to see how they form their letters, if that gives you any clues about how, you know, what the word that you can't solve means. So we can see here, like, Alexander McKay's written and James Maxwell McKay. And so all those M's and Mary, they're all really, really clear M's. So I think we can definitely rule out the first letter of this word being an M. It's definitely a W, isn't it? Because yeah. It's not like any of his other M's. So you can do that kind of process of elimination, getting to learn that particular person's handwriting just using this document. So that's one thing I'd do, spend time just scouring the whole page and getting better at reading this person's handwriting. And then the other thing is, when try and transcribe it, and literally letter by letter, and for any letter you don't know, put a question mark, and then you will know that it's a word that you're stuck on, and so you can keep thinking about it. And then in other records, so he's got married, he's 27, the chances are he's going to be having children soon. Yeah. And so in the baptism and birth records that are going to follow in the next few years after 1895, then look and see what his occupation is listed as there. And obviously it can change.
Yeah.
But it might give you clues.
I've told you some duff information. This is actually the marriage for James Maxwell McKay. So the father appears, obviously, in the father's name, which is Alexander. They've already moved to Yorkshire at this point. But equally, I can't read what his profession is. A girl? Do you see that?
Ooh, it looks like agent.
Maybe he was a spy. Maybe this is how I get to Ian Fleming.
Maybe. And then the person below looks like they're a collier.
Yes. And what would you say that says? Richard Rowden?
What is it? S-O-N. Rowden.
Rowden.
Yeah.
Mary Jane Rowden.
Yeah. I think it's just Rowden. Interesting, though. So this is your Alexander McKay's
son.
Who is he your direct ancestor or not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jim, yes.
So is James like your great-great-grandpa or your great-grandpa or something?
He's my great-great-great. He is my great-great-granddad, is he? I'm still on the mother line. I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't get off it. So he is my granddad's mum's dad. My second great grandparent.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. You should be really pleased with yourself. Your tree, you can't see it. No one else can see Nathan's tree, but it's looking really, really good.
I feel a bit naughty, though, because, like, I'm still missing. Oh, hello. I'm still missing some details from my second great-grandparents. So no death for Joseph Ward, no death for them, no death for Sarah Gill. There's lots of information that I feel like I should have got. When I was jumping back, I should have jumped on these bits instead.
I think you're aware of it. And then what you can do is every now and again, you could do like a little inventory of your tree and go, hey, am I missing any key records on my ancestors, whether direct ancestors or whether you want to go in the side branches as well, whatever level you feel happy with, write your little wish list and gradually buy the relevant records or see if you can find the information elsewhere, like what you were talking about before. Yeah.
Check this guy out. Thomas C. Savile had 7 siblings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of side branching, that.
Yes, yes. Yes, your tree is the most widest, shortest tree ever. It's brilliant. You can, honestly, this is so good, all these side branches. It's fantastic.
I'm getting sidetracked with everybody, though. I can't just let someone go backwards. I'm going sideways on everybody. And for fun, sometimes I expand every single dot on my tree and it just looks like chaos. And I'm obsessed with the mother line, and I do not know why. Like, I thought to myself, because obviously I'm George Horatio, I've gone on with that one so much, I will go across and somehow get on the father line, but I got caught with the McKays, so that's where I went.
It's a funny feeling, isn't it? Because when you were mentioning about finding Alexander McKay, and you're like, wait a minute, I'm in a different geographical area. And it's funny how, so definitely with our living family members, you know, the people you see often, you feel really comfortable with. It feels relaxing. It's nice to hang out with them. Then even with our ancestors, it's a little bit the same. The ones you've kind of seen a lot of in the records recently, you feel comfortable with them. You know, when you see details, you're like, yeah, this relates to these lot and this doesn't, because you're so kind of in the zone of them. And then newer branches, you feel a bit on best behaviour and a bit rusty and not really sure.
That's exactly how I feel. Like, I'm so familiar with George Horatio and everybody around him, as probably everybody who listens to the podcast is all I talk about. But I got so comfortable within those names and that area, and it's a safe zone for me now. And I like I said, I wanted to just go back and get some details and just be really cool. Boom, boom, boom. And as it is, I've got caught up again in everybody else's lives.
Mm. Well, I think it's good. It's really good.
Yeah, I quite like it.
So I've got a really tough question for you now.
Go for it.
Well, you know, it's our boss's birthday, isn't it?
It is.
It is. And it's his big birthday. And so I thought it'd be interesting to talk about happy birthday.
Okay.
And then part of me was like, oh, we definitely won't sing it. And then when I was Googling about it, it said, oh, the copyright law changed. And from 2017 onwards, then it's not protected by copyright. So theoretically, we could sing him happy birthday. So that's a tough question. I think we've got to not do it. Are you any good at singing, Nathan?
Oh, I've got a beautiful voice, but I think we should leave it as theoretical.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me, didn't know the copyright law had changed. We just want to say happy birthday to our boss for spending half a century on planet Earth.
Yes, well done on that. And putting up with us.
And putting up with us, most importantly. They've probably been outside 2 centuries. So I think we're good for this week, aren't we?
I think we are. We've discussed quite a bit.
Mm. And you know what things we've got to look forward to? So we've got our cool military series to help people learn about their military ancestors. And that is ongoing. That's going to go on through the rest of the year. And we've got the dreaded DNA word. So we've got a DNA Brick Walls masterclass, which is coming up next month in June. So that'll be really cool for people who are stuck on DNA, which is pretty much most of us.
Mm. I've just worked on an article for the July issue, mm-hmm, about cluster.
Yeah.
I didn't dare read it because I thought it was cheating. It's like, because I know I need to learn this, but it's going in our magazine. So yeah, there's something to be learned there.
And we've got some really cool talks coming up. We've actually got 2 talks on paleography. So that's, or paleography. People say it different ways. I say paleography, but I think it should be paleography. Anyway, we've got 2 talks coming up on that, which is reading old handwriting. So by the sound of it, I think we could have done with a bit more benefit from that earlier on when we're trying to work out that person's occupation. So that's later on in this month, in a few weeks' time. So if people go to our website, which is www.family-tree.co.uk, and then you click on the word webinars in our menu, and then in there you can find all sorts of courses and talks that we do. And we do a lot, don't we, Nathan?
We do a lot all the time.
DNA club, study club, one-off webinars, courses. And they're, honestly, when you listen to them, they're just super, super helpful, because it's actual practical information. It's not kind of you know, in theory stuff. It's information that once you've learned, you can store it away in your head and then it comes into play and kind of serves you well when you're actually doing your family history.
Definitely. Like from my perspective, I obviously know what we do, but it hasn't been until I've started doing my own tree that I've actually thought these are actually really useful and really valuable and obviously come up every week when I'm talking. So they are really good. Go check them out.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening again, everybody.